This episode will be partly a refresh of things we've talked about in the basic series already, but more of a very practical, point-by-point, what is necessary and what is not in the basics of key management. This is Basics Episode 7, The Basics of Key Management. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And I wanted to pause, well, mostly because I've still got like a really long read that I want to get finished. But we haven't done a basics episode in a while. I've had a couple of people ask me some questions that made me realize something that I was a little... That we haven't come back to with the basics is just kind of the really simple, really practical, what the hell do I do with my keys? So we went into an entire episode on what our keys are and, you know, hardware wallets and all of that good stuff. And I will tell you straight off the bat, you need a hardware wallet if you have any meaningful savings. If you're just tinkering, that's fine. Don't give yourself a homework assignment and, you know, have to invest all this money and stuff into it if you're just playing around. But it's very easy to get sucked in, and it's very easy for playing around to become a meaningful amount of money in Bitcoin. In fact, a good example actually was I was playing around with the BitKit wallet, which is one that I'm a big fan of, and I'm really looking forward to its future. And Synonym and John Carvalho and their team over there have built a really amazing and really intuitive product. But I was just testing a bunch of stuff out. So when I moved some Bitcoin to it, it was always intended to just be kind of a throwaway wallet. And I actually at some point took a screenshot of my backup seed and put it in the Discord chat with everyone in Synonym because we were trying to work something out. I can't remember what it was, some weird little quirk with the interface or whether it was showing addresses or something like that. I don't remember. It wasn't that big of a deal. But because I was thinking of the wallet so cheaply as just like a throwaway, I did that. But what's funny is I, you know, was testing it all out. So I added a bunch of contacts and, you know, I started making messages with people and, you know, all these things. And I started trying out a bunch of different widgets. And it got to the point where I'd kind of forgotten that I had done that. And then I just moved a little bit of Bitcoin to it and moved a little bit more Bitcoin to it. And eventually ended up with like $800 worth of Bitcoin on it. And my seed phrase is sitting in a screenshot in a Discord room that I don't know, 30 people or I have no idea how many people are in that Discord chat. Could see and just, and multiple people may have just out of trying to help me put it in their wallets. So I was just totally exposed. I was just like putting cash in other people's pockets. Nobody stole it from me or anything. And I just, you know, woke up one morning and it hit me and I was like, oh my God, I'm an idiot. And I withdrew it back to my nunchuck. But just a easy little story to explain that you need to be careful with your keys and you need to have basic practice on how you're going to back things up. You need to know how you're going to be treating your wallet going forward. It's really easy to start in one area and end up in another and then realize you haven't done some really, really critical steps. And when we're talking about a significant amount of money, just on its face, you need to get yourself a hardware wallet. If we're talking about in the thousands of dollars, you just need to do it. And you need to hold your own keys. Like, you need to get it off of an exchange. If it's on Coinbase, literally, it's not that hard. I know it seems intimidating, but it just isn't that difficult. Unfamiliar and complicated are not the same. Unfamiliar makes it hard to want to finally tackle, but that does not make it hard to do. And this feels like a really opportune place to bring up one of our sponsors who makes kick-ass hardware wallets. CoinKite makes, not only just like do they make the cold card, but they have like an entire list of amazing Bitcoin hardware devices. So I have the open, I have everything that they make, I think, except I only have one version of the Block Clock. But the OpenDime, which is the physical hardware or the physical Bitcoin that you can load up and then you can give to somebody like it's cash. Then the tap signers, which I know I rave about quite a bit on the show, but it is literally a credit card with NFC and you tap to your phone, which you can also do with the cold card. And one of my favorite things that we will talk about in this episode is the backup with the micro SD card. Simple backups, in my opinion, are safer because it just means you're more likely to do it. And then after you have it, you've got it set up, you can get yourself an address. And then when you go to buy your Bitcoin on Swan Bitcoin, you can withdraw straight to your cold card and they will do it automatically. It will automatically purchase and automatically withdraw to your hardware wallet every single day, month, week, whatever it is. Like, you set up the interval and it will just run forever, Laura. And then lastly, the way that feels like cheating, the fold card. I just get sats back. I got sats back on some DoorDash that we ordered today. 7% back on those gift cards. Just went to Bitcoin 2023. So many Ubers, Airbnb gift cards, Amazon, the flights. I mean, everything. I just, all the things that I buy. I mean, I bought dinner and food for everybody, and then I made them pay me back in sats, and I got sats back on all of the meals. It is a debit card where you get sats back on everything in your life. All of your fiat expenses pay you Bitcoin, and you can get 50,000 sats just for trying out the card. Go to GuySwan, nope, go to BitcoinAudible.com/fold. All those links will be in the show notes. But seriously, I got like 3,000 sats on my spins this morning. I'm feeling pretty good about it. Okay, so let's talk about key management. The most important thing to remember, like, especially when you get stories, when you get advice, you're going to get everybody telling you how to protect your stash or your keys or whatever from a different, in a different scenario or from a different adversary. And this is the interesting and or unfortunate thing about security is, it is all a trade-off. There is no perfect security. And every single time you make something slightly more secure, you're largely going to be making it more complex or more difficult to remember exactly what you did, which is going to open yourself back up to the most common problem of not being able to figure out, recover, or remember where your backup is. So never forget that complicated is generally your enemy. And for as much as people will say, do this to make sure if the state comes and attacks you and all of this stuff, which is good, and maybe it's important to have like a 1 foot out the door sort of backup plan, but literally the government is not your worry. It is not your number one concern. A thief is not your number one concern. A scammer is not your number one concern. With your keys on your hardware wallet, your number one concern is you. Your number one enemy is just forgetting it or putting it in a stupid place or just skipping it. Forgetting that you took a freaking screenshot of it and put it into a Discord room. You are your worst enemy. And simple and intuitive is your best friend to defend against yourself. So I'm going to finish this episode right now. We're going to talk a lot more about it, but I'm going to finish this episode with everything that you need to know. Just write down your keys and put it in the place where you keep things that you want to keep safe. Same place. You got a safe, put it there. You got a bread box that you stick shit in the bottom of it, put it there. You put something in your freezer, put it there. Whatever it is, wherever that you keep those other things that you know you need to keep safe, just do the same thing with your Bitcoin keys. Then after you have a reliable backup, you have the keys written down, then start thinking about failure modes. Then start thinking about, well, okay, what if my house burns down? Okay, well, what if my girlfriend cheats on me and leaves me and knows where I keep my important stuff? Okay, what if the state comes in and decides that I donated too much to the truckers And now they confiscate all my stuff, and I have to get it back through court and prove that my house and all of my things are innocent. Because civil asset forfeiture is the most idiotic law in the world. And what if you're at gunpoint? All of those great things. Then you can start thinking about those scenarios. But the number one scenario you have to worry about is just not having the backup when the device fails, or when you drop it in the toilet, or through the grate on the sidewalk, because it's just magnets for important things down there, I think. Now, paper backups, just writing it down, is always a great way, just because it's not an electronic device. You know, there's nothing to it. It's a freaking piece of paper. But I do also really like simplicity. As much as that is very reliable and very analog, which is good in the context of security for digital things, I also am a really big fan of the micro SD card backup. And that's something I've touted as a benefit of both Cold Card and BitBox in the past. Because the ability to just basically to have the card in and be like, do a backup, and then you can just store that in your safe or something. The one problem I see there is that it's almost simple enough that you can kind of forget. And micro SD cards are generally generic. Like, it's hard to tell them apart. So it's easier to kind of lose or get mixed up and stuff. So I would do something to clearly identify, or maybe get one that's specifically like a different color or a different thing, so that it kind of stands out. It's probably a pretty good practice. But honestly, if you're just putting it, if you have a safe or something like that, or a tin can or a jar or whatever the hell it is, just make sure it goes in there. Now, that's your first level of defense. I would say probably the second most concerning would be a local adversary. Somebody that you think you know or trust, a spouse, a sneaky friend who knows you like Bitcoin. I don't know. Relationships are hard. People like to screw each other over. So another really good, this is one layer of complexity, and this certainly has consequences if you screw it up. But that's why I have a very explicit piece of advice with this one, is this is what I refer to as poor man's multi-sig, is a passphrase, a 25th word wallet. Now, most wallets and software will have some version of this kind of built in. When you plug in your hardware wallet, it'll ask you. Sometimes you'll have to go into the settings and basically turn it on. But there are two pieces of advice here. What this does is this generates an entirely new wallet from 25 words, from basically an entirely new piece of entropy to generate an entirely new key, that without this little passphrase, without this extra password, you won't generate the same wallet. So if somebody found your keys, let's just use something stupid simple for the sake of example, is, you know, I've got my keys in my freezer, and, you know, I'm in college and I'm dating, and, you know, this girl decides to stab me in the back. And so she goes and she finds it and she takes it. Now, if she takes all those seed words and generates a wallet, she's going to generate the same wallet that I did. Now, if I have a 25th word, if I have a passphrase wallet on top of that, let's say my passphrase is just 1234. That's it. It's like just absolutely dirt simple. Well, when she takes those words, she's not going to generate that. And more importantly, there is zero indication whatsoever that that wallet exists. Like, it's generated on the fly. It's generated when you type it in. Those keys are generated, the pub key is generated, and then it will search the chain for all relevant data. Which means that if our supposed attacker here doesn't know that it exists, there's zero indication that there was anything there. And this is where, like, some people do like a honeypot, or they'll do a dummy wallet. They'll put like $500 in the front wallet, and then they'll have their real stash or their hardcore savings in the 1234 passphrase wallet. And then if they ever see the $500 disappear, well, then they're like, oh my God, my keys are compromised. I've got to move this to a new cold card or generate some new keys, whatever it is. So it's kind of like the canary in the coal mine, right? Is it, it lets you know that something might be up. And it's also a great one for a distress situation. You know, you're being held captive and, you know, so, or somebody's got a gun to your head and they're trying to steal from you or something. Is that you just give them that front-facing wallet and they do not get access to your cold storage. Now, the interesting thing about the passphrase wallet is, here's a couple of tips. One, as someone who has lost money behind a passphrase wallet because he did not store the password, don't do that. Definitely store the password. But more importantly, don't think about it like a password for a wallet. I mean, for a service online. Like when you're using a service or whatever online, use a 13-character random generated password, right? That was always my practice. That is a horrible idea for a 25th word because that means that if you lose it, it's literally gone. There's absolutely zero freaking chance that you can ever generate that, just brute force your way into regenerating that wallet if you don't remember what those 13 characters are. And it's even worse with the key standard in the passphrase wallet because you actually have to hash it 1,000 times. And I found this out because I was trying to figure out how many decades it would take me to brute force to get back into that wallet. They hash it 1,000 times to generate the key, which means that anything that you think, any computation that you think you need to do, you actually have to multiply it by 1,000. So if your estimate of, I have to guess this many things to see if it's this, how many characters the password was, if your estimate is like it's going to take 40 years, well, it's actually going to take 40,000 years because every single try takes 1,000 hashes. And what did we learn about hashes in episode 3 or whatever it was? We learned that, or episode 2, is that hashes are deterministic and you can't guess them ahead of time. So there's nothing you can do but hash 1,000 times to get that quote-unquote answer. And if it's not the right one, you got to do the next one. You got to hash 1,000 times again. And there's no skipping steps. It is literally designed to be brute force resistant. So, and also remember the reason you it's okay to use those passwords for services like that is that there's an admin on the other end. You can call a 1-800 number. You can get a password reset. What you're doing is you're protecting yourself from an adversary on an open network where somebody can just get your email address and try to log in and you won't know it. That's not really a problem with your hardware wallet. It's not on the internet. It's not attached to your email. It's literally just your keys in a manual place that you wrote down somewhere, which means that in the situation for your passphrase, do not think about it like a super secure, crazy, random password. Think about it like a very small last wall defense it's just like, I'm just going to put this under my bed. It's just like a little bit of extra way to hide something. That's all it is. And if you ever forget it, make sure that it's easy enough that you could brute force it so that as long as you have the keys, you're fine. If it's 5 numbers, nobody's going to be able to get into that easily. It's going to be a pain in the butt. And I know it's going to be a pain in the butt because it's going to be a pain in the butt for you to get it if you forget what those 5 numbers are. But the thing is you can get it. It's just like giving yourself a known obstacle course before you can get to your keys if you do something wrong. It's just punishment for bad practice. But you will not lose your money. If you use a 13-character randomly generated password from a password manager and you don't have that backed up somewhere, you will lose your coins. Because there is no 1-800 number, there is no website, there is no forgot my password here. And this is also important for, you know, your loved ones and for inheritance as well, is that if something goes wrong and you aren't there to give it to them, but they are aware that it exists, again, it's not going to be easy, but they can get into it. And, you know, that also could be an interesting way to break up the ownership of those. Like I say, it's a poor man's multi-sig. So, like, let's say your passphrase is just the word hat. Well, you can make sure that your family, your wife, your kids, whoever, has direct access to the seed phrase in your safe or wherever it is. and that, you know, you leave Hat in your will or something. Like you, that's what you give to your lawyer. So, like, rather than giving over your seed phrase to your lawyer and having them needing to trust them not to take your money, well, that's how you can have a separate backup of the passphrase. And that also gives you a small but decent line of defense against a lot of different scenarios. Now, if some forensics or, you know, somebody from the government comes, like, they're going to figure that out, or, well, that's not necessarily true, but they would have the tools then to brute force it. So if you ever lost the seed or the cold card or whatever it is, and you've got an adversary in that sort of situation, or a hacker who specifically has stolen it from you, well, then you're just going to want to move the coins very, very quickly. But you have a head start if you know what the passphrase is. And it's also important in that instance is use something that's super memorable, so that if you don't write it down or you lose where it's written down or something like that, not only is it brute forcible, but it's just something that you're just generally not going to forget. Think of it as purposefully a very, very small, very low barrier that is just there as a kind of adding a little bit of resistance at a critical point where you can defend yourself or have a backup or kind of a way out in the more extreme scenarios that may arise, but are less common. Now, what if your house burns down? What if your house floods? Water comes pouring through the roof, tree falls through your house. Words on paper generally don't hold up very well. This is where steal comes in. Now, there's a lot of different tacks you can take with steal. There's some really advanced, the cipher wheel, and there's some really crazy products out there. And honestly, a lot of them are really cool. I have a number of them. But I typically, again, my mind goes to simple and cheap. In that regard, I'm actually a decent fan of the seed plate, which you can find from CoinKite sells them right there in the store. Again, hardware devices, I'm telling you, check out CoinKite. But you can actually get them from a number of different places. A lot of people sell the seed plates, and they're really simple. One of the interesting little quirks about the word list for the seed words is that none of them repeat the first four letters. So they're designed, the words are picked so that very few, like after you have four letters, you know, like if you have the word, let's take behind, B-E-H-I, is that as long as you save those first four letters, and you'll notice this on like the seed plate and a lot of different backup mechanisms, is that as long as you save B-E-H-I, there are no other words in the list. And you can look up the BIP39 word list if you want. Like, it's just, you can just find it online. But there will be no other words that have all four of those letters at the beginning of the word, B-E-H-I. It's specifically meant to exclude. So you only have to keep those first four letters in order to know what the whole word is. And so you'll notice that on a lot of seed plates, because, you know, when you're carving something into metal or when you're breaking off little things and you gotta have letters and everything, or you're punching stuff into a steel plate, you know, efficiency is your friend. So if you only need four letters, and maybe you don't remember that it's behind, but you have B-E-H-I, well, if you can check against the list, it's just going to fill in behind because there's nothing else it can be. Now, one of these, this is a great way, like if you have like hardcore cold storage, it's good just to not move it. Don't touch it. And if you know it's going to be there for a long time, like this is not a software wallet. You know, this is not something that you're constantly pulling money out of to do a thing for, you know, twice out of the year. If it's your cold storage and you only send to it, definitely steal. Steel can survive some pretty remarkable things. Even the little punches in the steel plate, you would not believe. Lopp, Jameson Lopp, has a really good, really long write-up and like physical test of all of these different steel wallets. You wouldn't believe some of the beatings that he would put these things through, and you could still freaking read them. That is quite the peace of mind. And if that is where you have that hat wallet, you know, just behind those three letters, that even in the case that your house burns down and a firefighter comes and steals your keys and tries to get your coins, whatever it is that you still have that last little barrier of defense. And again, in that situation, you're still only looking at, you still only have two pieces, right? You have your seed and you have your, and you have your passphrase. But it's also good practice to wipe your hardware wallet. If you're not intending to use this regularly and you want to use your hardware wallet for like easier, like let's say, okay, let's just say, take numbers for simplicity's sake. You have super, super cold storage. It's $1 million freaking of Bitcoin. Then you have your, I might need it once or twice a year, might buy a car, thinking about putting money down for a house, $100,000. That's your cool wallet. Then you have your, I need it pretty regularly day to day on my desktop, and I use it to refill and or offload all of my hot wallets, your warm wallet on your desktop, and that's got $10,000. And then all of your little cash wallets and your Lightning wallets only ever have between $5 and upwards of a few hundred, maybe a thousand tops before you're offloading it back to your desktop. You want to increasingly, everything only gets colder in larger amounts. In that instance, the $1 million savings would be on a steel plate, and there would be no hardware wallet with those keys active on it. So I would generate it on my cold card. I would stamp it into the steel plate. I'd send Bitcoin to it, verify that it's there, and then, you know, bury the steel plate in my backyard. No, that goes into the category of, like, as soon as you start making it complex, as soon as you hide it in that special place where nobody will think of it, you'll realize that in a year that you forgot where that special place was. So don't do that. But you store that somewhere, you keep that safe, and you don't touch that. And as you continue to move savings to that, you always think in your mind, this is where it is, this is how I would recover it, et cetera, et cetera. Make sure you refresh that in your mind regularly. Then what is on your cold card wallet, what's on your active hardware wallet, is the $100,000 worth of Bitcoin. Is the, I might need it from time to time, about to buy a car, blah, blah, blah. That is still offline. That is still stored away in a special place, and it is super secure. But it's also on your hardware wallet so that you can spin it up at any point, and you can use it if you need it. You have this written down on, this is either backed up on a micro SD card, or it's written down on, you know, words on a piece of paper. And in fact, if you've got a lot of wallets, another really good thing is to just have like a little booklet. In fact, there's a really cool, it's a little book. It's called, I think it's called like the Stone Book or something like that. It's by Shield Folio. But it's basically just kind of a fancy, it's a more durable paper. It's hard to tear and stuff. And I don't remember how I got one at some point, but I've used it for a while, and it's really great, especially for like keeping up with a lot of just things like seed phrases that, you know, you have like tons of mobile wallets and stuff, and you want to keep them in one place. You want to keep it organized. It's good to have like a little book or a pad or something that you use for the more ephemeral wallets, the ones that you're not 100% sure you're going to use, but you just need like kind of an easy place to back up to. And, you know, for extremely hot wallets on the phone and stuff, a password manager is not a terrible solution. A lot of people tell you don't do that. Never do it for your cold storage. I completely agree with them there. But for hot wallets, when you're only using a small amount of money anyway, like that's the practice you should be doing, well, then the risk of having it stolen from something like a password manager versus the risk of losing your phone and then needing to recover it and the ease of doing it through a password manager, it just feels like a reasonable trade-off. But just don't think of a password manager as a safe place to store critical offline keys. The real problem with a password manager is that you are on a computer. Like, this is This is data that is touching the internet, and the point of a hardware wallet is that it does not do that. Your keys never leave your device, and if they do, it is analog. It is stamped into a piece of steel by you, or it is written down on a piece of paper by you. And now I know we've covered this in the keys episodes and some other things, but just because you can never hear it enough, the cardinal sins of key management. Always back up. Always back up your keys before you use the wallet. If it is a really important wallet, if this is your cold storage, it's not a bad idea to back it up, wipe it, recover it, like, you know, move like a little bit to it or just like confirm the address or something, and then recover the wallet and make sure it's all there, that the recovery process works as expected before making it your full-on cold storage wallet. Again, it's not that difficult. Might seem unfamiliar if you've never done it before, but it's not that complicated and it's kind of fun. Next, never ever for your cold storage and your cool storage, for none, I don't know why I made the distinction, for no wallets ever do you punch it into a wallet or a browser extension or a website because it asked you to. And if it ever says, oh, there is an alert and something is wrong, we need your keys, I don't know of a single wallet that works that way. And if a wallet does work that way, you should stop using that wallet. That is 100% a scam or a piece of malware. Especially if we are talking about a hardware wallet. There is no reason you would ever want to take it from that hardware wallet back to the computer. And there is nothing that you could do in that situation that would help or that would fix something wrong with the hardware wallet. So just remember that. Never punch in your seed phrase anywhere, and if anybody asks you for it, they're trying to steal your money. And they're almost always going to do it under an emergency situation. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Something terrible is happening. Somebody's trying to steal your coins. Go to your hardware wallet. Go to your setup. Never trust somebody. Never click on a link in an email that is telling you something is wrong. Like a great rule of thumb. Just like, you know, Twitter will from time to time tell you, it's like, oh, somebody's trying to log into your account, or there's a login from this device and we don't know it, that sort of thing. And I'm pretty sure a lot of the time they have the link right in there. It's like verify. I never click on it. I never ever do it. What happens is if I'm not 100% sure, like let's say I logged in from my phone or something like that, I don't remember that this happened, or I'm not sure if this is a legitimate thing, I go to Twitter and log in. It will give me any relevant notifications or anything if it was actually important. And if not, everything looks good, everything's fine, then I'm good. But I don't click on the stuff in the email. And if it's for a specific device, well, then I won't be able to log into that device until I actually do respond to it. But I just always make sure that I am in control and I am the one going to the website and creating the link or the URL or specifically verifying the device. Don't let someone else start those processes for you. If you think it's a legitimate concern or legitimately somebody's trying to hack you or somebody's trying to steal your keys, go through the course and the setup that you know and that you initiate. Don't click on something else. Don't go through somebody else's extension or a website, and never, ever, ever type your keys into anything unless you specifically have initiated a recovery process. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. Now, there's some really cool little tricks. And this is really kind of the coolest thing about the cold card to me. Not to turn the end of the episode here into a commercial or anything, but there's some really neat features that the cold card has that I don't really, not a lot of other hardware wallets have them. Some of them have dummy pins because, you know, and I guess we haven't really talked about this much, but you know, the other thing that you need in regards to the hardware wallet specifically is obviously the, not only the seed phrase is for your keys, they are your keys for your Bitcoin. And it doesn't matter what hardware wallet or software or anything you use, that seed phrase will get you your Bitcoin back. But to get into your device, to get into your cold card, your Bitbox, your Trezor, whatever, you need a PIN number, but that's specific to the device. So if the device dies, the PIN is now irrelevant. So that's just kind of like a block for the device. Well, the going back to the passphrase idea, the 25th word, that is not specific to the device. So that's the separation. Like some people might think, oh, well, isn't that just basically a PIN number? It's, you know, might have the same level of difficulty as a PIN number and the fact that you just use like four or five numbers, but it does not behave like a PIN number. If you don't have your passphrase, your 25th word, then you literally cannot generate your wallet. You can't get your keys. It's part of your keys. You're literally using that to modify the other 24 words to generate an entirely new set of keys and addresses. Whereas the PIN number has nothing to do with your seed. It's specific to the device. So just to clarify that in case that was confusing at all. Some people say separate the PIN number and the seed phrase. I don't know why. That kind of feels like another complicated thing to me is... Because, you know, if you end up losing your device, then your PIN numbers are irrelevant. It doesn't matter. You just need your seed words. So just put the PIN number right there with the seed words. Wherever you're storing it to keep it safe, put them in the same place. Now, going back to the feature, or a couple of really cool features that the Cold Card has, is they have something called the Duress PIN and the Brick PIN. So the Duress PIN is a PIN number that you can give somebody that you use. It's an option that you select when you're setting it up. And it's a different PIN number that you can give somebody that opens it up, generates a wallet and everything with your quote unquote, your same seed phrase as if everything is the same, except that it's not. It's just an illusion. It's created from a completely unique and empty set of keys. So it just opens up a wallet and it looks like the Cold Card's working like it always should and that you gave the correct PIN number, but there's nothing there. Now the Brick Me PIN is really interesting. This is a PIN number that is like a self-destruct button. If someone types in this PIN number, it literally destroys the secure element in the Cold Card. So even if they hack into it and tear the thing apart and try to get some information off the chip, nothing. It's just the whole Cold Card is dead. It is literally a self-destruct button. And it was funny. I saw there was like a Twitter conversation or something, or actually I think it was on Noster, but somebody brought it up in conversation with Novak with MBK, and someone responded that you could put like a piece of paper, or you could write it on the back of your Cold Card, the Brick Me PIN. And just know you should never, ever use it. But if you ever lose your device, then the one PIN that they have access to that they would try would actually destroy the device to make sure that your seed phrase and everything was entirely safe. And I thought that was a pretty cool idea of just like having your PIN number written right there. It's like, oh yeah, this is my PIN number. And what's funny is that, like, how would they not try it? You know what I mean? Like, they don't have any other obvious thing. And it's literally written like right there as the PIN. And then that's what protects your device. That's what protects you from ever having your keys leaked in that situation. And obviously, as long as you did the one most important thing that you must do whenever you have a hardware wallet, whenever you own your own Bitcoin and you hold your keys, is that you made a backup of them. You have an analog written down, or it's on a steel plate, or it's on a micro SD card stuck in your safe, wherever it is, you have a backup. So you lose the Cold Card, totally fine. That's sad. That's a sad day. You can get a new Cold Card, but your keys are still yours. They're still safe, and you are still the only one who can get to your Bitcoin. And that, at the end of the day, is the whole point. And even with all the complexity and all the possible, like, you can get into multi-sig, but I didn't want to talk about multi-sig in this one just because that can get really complicated and there's just a lot of moving pieces and it's not necessary. It's just not necessary. Like I said, the 25th word is actually a really clever poor man's multi-sig that doesn't lock you out even if you end up doing something wrong, as long as you know that it's there. Not to say that it would be fun to have to brute force a 5 or 6 character password, and Jesus, don't lose it. Like, keep it safe somewhere. But it is a decent way to essentially have the effect of multi-sig, the ability to separate and maybe geographically separate those pieces so that you can actually keep that with your family. It's like, hey guys, remember this 6-character password, or just remember the word hat. Everybody got that? Remember hat? Cool. And then you've basically got a backup of part of your key, quote unquote. And then you can just adjust, you know, how you want to store your seed phrase and what works best for you in your situation and who your likely adversary is. You know, there are places in this world where your government is your most likely adversary. And increasingly, even where I live, that might become in the not too distant future, it could be like all this crap is up in the air. I mean, Jesus, I would have said Canada wasn't a place where with no legal precedent whatsoever and without committing any crime that you could just have all your money confiscated from you. But I would have been wrong. So it's not as if it's silly to think about those sorts of scenarios. But I think it's also just important to remember your hierarchy, to remember the most likely scenario, and that, you know, the backup is just the first line of defense. But it is the most important. Just make sure you write down your seed phrase. And like I have said in this series before, but I will say it again, don't give your keys to anybody. Don't punch in your seed phrase anywhere. And for 99.9% of the situations, all you really need is a solid hardware wallet, keys that never touch a computer, and a good backup. Just write them down, put them in a steel plate, and know where they are. And you might be shocked by how many bad situations that will keep you safe from. So I just wanted to go over this again just because I've gotten the questions recently. And while we did briefly cover some key management stuff in some of the episodes, and I think it's actually just really important to refresh this stuff a lot. Because some people, you know, were just getting into it and now they have a hardware wallet and now they're in, you know, everybody's trying to overcomplicate their situations or their setups a lot. I think it's important not to do that, to do the lowest hanging fruit, do the simplest version that gets you the security or the feature that you're trying to accomplish, because simple is usually more reliable. It just is that way. So with that, thank you to CoinKite and ColdCard for some awesome hardware devices and for having those cool features, actually, the Duress pin and the Brick Me pin, which are actually really, really clever. And if you ever wanted that, I hadn't thought about that until just I saw that comment or whatever, is the idea of putting your Brick Me pin on the device. That's actually kind of cool. That is not a bad way to protect yourself in a really interesting situation. Also, a thank you to Swan Bitcoin and Fold. All these guys make products and services that I use literally all the freaking time, but they also support the show. They also make the show possible and keep this thing running so that I can keep learning about this stuff, keep trying my best to wrap my head around it. I can keep breaking and playing and testing out all the things and all the wallets and all the setups to try to instill some simple rules and some simple practices. Because there's a lot of really fun, crazy, neat stuff that you can do, but most of it's unnecessary. Most of the time, it's just keep it simple. Just back up your keys. So with that, we will close today's episode. And hopefully I will have it out tonight. Keep an eye out. I noticed that AI Unchained was not actually, thank you for a number of you who pointed it out, it was not propagating very well. It was not in a lot of the things. So I made sure it got published to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, CastBox, a few others today. So it should show up soon, but the second episode is coming. It is recorded. I am jumping over to it right now to get it finished up. So stay tuned. With that, I will catch you on the next episode, and until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. Any intelligent fool can make things bigger, more complex, and more violent. It takes a touch of genius and a lot of courage to move in the opposite direction. Ernest F. Schumacher.